This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
I want to do two things. The one is to deal with the obvious question that must have been arising in your minds as we've gone through with this, a question which applies not only to the midah of kas, of anger, but in general to one's whole, to the way one handles one's emotions, and that is the division which we made between active and reactive kas, and the fact that we basically said that reactive kas is never allowed. Really, there's not much difference between that in that area. There's not that much difference between kas and other emotions, because to become emotional about something purely reactively, without having thought about it at all, you do run the risk, of course, that your emotion is all wrong. And emotions are dangerous things, because emotions get one excited and they get one to act and to do all sorts of things. And if your emotion is wrong, if one is highly emotional about something in an incorrect way, the resultant actions can be very severely out of tune. But this applies particularly with kas, because as you will have seen in your observation of people, I'm sure throughout your lives, kas gets one to do the most unbelievable things. I'm sure you've seen people do all sorts of funny things in a rage. Break plates and throw books onto the floor and kick lampposts and slam doors. Stupid, ridiculous things. And it can sometimes be more destructive than that. People can murder in anger and hurt people in anger and become aggressive in all sorts of dangerous ways in anger. And the fact that it's spontaneous is no justification at all. So the problem becomes acute in kas, but it exists with all emotions. In the same way as in a spontaneous anger can lead you to be aggressive in a most destructive and unacceptable way, so a reactive emotion, any other form of emotion, can lead you to do things which really one shouldn't do. Whatever emotion you wish to choose, the same can apply. If you become over enthusiastic about something, there is the fear that over enthusiasm will lead you to do something which shouldn't be done. How many marriages have broken up because some man got over enthusiastic about some lady who wasn't his wife? This one just got over enthusiastic. A lovely, it's a terrific person, very nice person. So it starts, and then 1, 2, 3, and danger has been done. Started with a good, positive emotion. It was reactive. It was spontaneous. You couldn't help it. And so while emotions are terribly powerful tools in Avodas Hashem, in the service of God, one needs one's emotions, one needs to get oneself to do things and to feel things, it has to be emotional. We don't want to operate in an unemotional way. We don't want to operate in an unfeeling way. Chas v'shalom, not at all. However, as great a tool as they are capable of being in Avodas Hashem, so are one's emotions capable of being the most destructive elements of human behavior. If people's emotions did not short-circuit their intellects, a lot of sorrows could be avoided in interpersonal relationships, in one's own way of looking at things. One tends to get all emotional about things which, if you looked at rationally, you wouldn't get so emotional about. You tend to get very upset about things sometimes which, if you analyzed rationally, you wouldn't get upset. But emotions short-circuit the brain, and that's where all the trouble is. If people's emotions didn't short-circuit their brains, Hitler would never have got away with what he did. There's no way he would have persuaded the whole German nation to do what they did. It's just because he was able to appeal to them in an emotional way, so that it was able to short-circuit their brains. And greatness can be achieved that way. Sometimes one needs to move people, and to move them intellectually takes a long time. Because to move them intellectually means to change them. To start building them slowly, slowly, giving them the means of analyzing situations. As we talked a little bit earlier, of changing value systems, of seeing things in a new light, in a new way, of doing it themselves. That can take years and years to change a person through his mind, through his intellect. But to get somebody hit up and excited about something, if you're a good dramatist, it can be done very easily. And one can make people do very great things that way. A great person who appeals to another person's emotions can get him to do all sorts of wonderful things which he would never have thought of doing himself. And sometimes he can be got to do things which are not right. I think when we're looking at kas, when we're looking at anger, we're looking at a very extreme emotion. But nearly everything we've said in relation to this kas, to this emotion of anger, applies to all the emotions. Kas also can be used positively. We've been discussing that over the last weeks. But it can be destructive. So with each one of the emotions. The big thing is, the greatness of the emotion is that it can get you to do things that are greater than you. And the danger of the emotion is that it can get you to do things which are wrong. It can get you to do things which are very wrong, totally wrong, that have nothing right about them. To the extent that when you've done them, you look at yourself and you say, goodness me, did I do that? How come? It's just not like me. But it can happen. It can get other people to do things and you can't imagine. So, how could he have done it? It's just not him. An emotion can get him to do it. And it can get one to cross the borderline cases, which is more dangerous in a sense because it's more frequent. It's not that often that people such as ourselves are going to land up murdering somebody in a rage. That much control most of us have got at most times. But to do things which are just over the line of propriety, to do things which, if you sit down and analyze it carefully, are just not allowed. They're not right, they're wrong. That's where the emotions can become so dangerous. And at the time of doing it, you believe it's so wonderful and so, and you feel so good about it and you feel so strongly emotionally about it. It feels good and it feels right and you're sure it's right and you do it with all the confidence in the world. But if that emotion wasn't there and one could sit down with you and say slowly, slowly, just analyze what it is you're doing and what it is you've done, it wouldn't be very difficult to show you that kacha lo osim, we don't do those kind of things. And that's why before we started this whole series on kas, we had that series on counteracting this by means of the picture of the father or the Rebbe or Moshe Rabbeinu in the case of the people of Israel, just to be able to have some quick emotional counter-reaction to quick emotional surges. To be able to say when you're all emotional, you can't sit and figure it out rationally. But you can compare it to that picture of the face and say, my goodness, I don't know if it's right or it's wrong. I know just one thing. I can't do it because he wouldn't have done it. That's all. And then your emotion settles down a little bit and you figure out why wouldn't he have done it. And it comes straight. This is one of the big things we're worried about in anger. What I want to deal with this evening pretty briefly is, what is wrong with us? We were given emotions and we must use the emotions. Why is there this danger in emotional usage and how does one counteract it? What is the danger? Particularly in relationship to kas. And secondly, to examine, in tandem with that, the very close relationship there seems to be in Chazal between anger, or rather let us say, between the control of anger and wisdom. And between the inability to control anger and the lack of wisdom. There's a pasuk in Mishlei. Erech apayim rav tevuno. This is a pasuk in the 14th chapter of Mishlei. A man of long patience, a man who's able to control his anger, has much wisdom. Uketzar ruach meirim iveles. And a short-tempered person is displaying his foolishness. So already there we have the concept of a relationship between wisdom and temper control and between foolishness and lack of temper control. There are various other psukim in Kohelet, there are also psukim on that. And the various Mamre Chazal, there are just two that I want to do with you this evening. Omar Rabbi Abba Omar Shmuel, this is a Gemara in Eruvin Daf Yud Gimel Omid Beis, said Rabbi Abba in the name of Shmuel, Sholosh Shonim Nechluku Beishamayu Beishila. For 3 years there was an argument raging between Beishamay and Beishila. There were many arguments that raged between them, but this was a very unusual one. Halalu Oimrim Halocha Kamoiseinu, Halalu Oimrim Halocha Kamoiseinu. The argument was now not on some academic issue, but the argument in this case between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai was Who is the halacha like? For the first time they came against each other in the real world. Who are we going to decide like? All these disputes we've had over the years, all these differences of opinions we've had over the years, now comes the time to decide who's right. And the arguments were severe even while they were academic. Can you imagine what the argument became when it came to a matter of halachic decision? Like, who is the halacha? Yotzo Baskol v'omro, a very diplomatic Baskol came out. A Baskol is a heavenly voice. But unlike other diplomats, when a Baskol comes out, not only is it diplomatic, but it is MS as well, it is also truth. That's not always the case with diplomacy. Usually, if you're going to be diplomatic, it means you've either got to be dishonest on one side, or you've got to be dishonest on the other side, or more frequently, you've got to be dishonest on both sides. But it's not very often that one can be truthful and diplomatic. The only time you can be truthful and diplomatic is when you don't say anything. It's the only way you can get away with it. The obligation to say something, to be truthful, doesn't mean that you must always speak the truth. It means that whenever you speak, what you say should be true. But it doesn't mean that you have to say every word of truth. You can sometimes keep quiet. So the only diplomacy which is truthful is silence. If you're going to try and talk and be diplomatic, you're going to run into dishonesty. Because we're dealing in a dishonest world. If one was dealing with emeskite, with truthfulness in a truthful world, you could afford to be open, you could afford to speak openly. But when you're dealing with emeskite, with truthfulness in a dishonest world, you will inevitably find that you are controversial. Somebody came to me the other day, he said he doesn't want to come to my shiurim. I said, why not? I said, you're welcome to come, but I want to understand why not. He says, because everything you say is controversial. So I said, firstly, I think that's an exaggeration. But secondly, so what? I mean, controversial is not a criticism. Is there anything I say which you think is wrong? He says, no, chas v'shalom, not one single thing. But it's so controversial. I explained to him that if you're talking emes, I believe that if you're talking emes in a non-emes world, obviously what you're going to say is going to be controversial. How can you possibly say something which is true in an untruthful world and not be controversial? If you're uncontroversial, either you're dealing in a very truthful world, or you've adapted the truth to what the world wants to hear. But if you're going to talk the truth, irrespective of what the world wants to hear, it's not going to be emeskat. But when a baskel comes out, it's a beautiful baskel because it's diplomatic and it's true. No compromise in the truth for the sake of diplomacy. And the baskel said, Eilu ve'elu divrei lukim chayimen. Both are right. Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, you're both right. These are both the words of a living God. Everything you've reasoned out, everything you've worked out, you Beis Hillel and you Beis Shammai, everything is Divrei Elokim Chayim. It's Torah, it's correct, it's accurate. The halacha ke Beis Hillel, but the halacha is like Beis Hillel. That's what the Baskel said. The way the world has to act, is according to Beis Hillel. But that doesn't mean that Beis Shammai is wrong. V'chi me'achar she'elu ve'elu divrei elokim chayim, asks the Gemara, mipnei ma zochu Beis Hillel likva halacha kemoisom. Gemara is not afraid to ask questions, even on a baskel, even on a heavenly voice. Who says the Gemara? If they're both so right and they're both so correct, and Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai elu ve'elu divrei elokim chayim, so why in fact is the halacha like Beis Hillel? What did they deserve to do this favoritism? And one would imagine the answer of the Gemara to be because Beis Hillel was cleverer than Beis Shammai, because Beis Hillel knew more than Beis Shammai, because Beis Hillel is older than Beis Shammai. No. Mipnei shenoichin ve'aluvin, because they are pleasant people, and they are aluvin. Says Rashi, aluvin means savlonim. They are patient. Savlonim correctly means they are able to suffer. Suffer meaning not suffering in the Christian sense, but suffering in the sense of tolerating. They're able to endure without reacting always. They can just take a thing as it is. Aluvin. V'shoinin divreihem v'divrei Beis Shammai. And when they used to learn not only their halachas. They used to learn the halachas of Beis Shammai as well. And they used to figure out always, why does Beis Shammai hold that way? Let's understand why Beis Shammai holds that way. Let's not just say they're talking nonsense, it's not correct. When they differed with Beis Shammai, they spent as much time studying Beis Shammai as they spent studying themselves. And they had to understand that every question which Beis Shammai asked, they needed to answer for their own satisfaction. Not only that, whenever Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel were quoted by Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai was mentioned first. They showed more respect to Beis Shammai than they showed to their own views. That's why the halacha is like that. We'll deal with the Chazal in general, but the particular one that concerns us is Aluvim. Firstly, it's interesting to note that the reason that halacha is decided like Beis Hillel has got nothing to do with their knowledge. I mean, Beis Hillel in relationship to Beis Shammai, with their superior knowledge, with their superior brilliance, or anything. On the contrary, Beis Shammai was considered much sharper, much more brilliant, much more on top of things from an academic point of view. But as far as halacha was concerned, the halacha was like Beis Hillel because they were aluvin, among other things. They were able not to react. They were able to suffer something. They were able to tolerate something without immediately reacting. So it's interesting altogether to note that halacha is decided in favor of one party because of his midas, because of his character, not because of his knowledge. When it comes to halacha, that's something of prime importance, that the person who's paskening the halacha is a mensch. And that's something which weighs very heavily. But we're going to have to understand why, and we're going to have to understand why these particular midas, why these particular characteristics. And to do that, let's look at another chazal in Psochim Daf Samach Vav Amud Beis. Reish Lakish Omar, Reish Lakish said, Kol Adam Shekoyes, any man who gets angry, Im Chochom Hu, if he is a wise man, Chochmosoi Mistalekes Mimenu, his wisdom departs from him. Im Novi Hu, Nevuosoi Mistalekes Mimenu, if he is a prophet, his prophecy departs from him. Im Chochom Hu, Chochmosoi Mistalekes Mimenu, where do we learn from that even if you're a wise man, at a moment of anger, your wisdom disappears? Mimoshe. We learn it from Moshe himself. Dichtiv, as it's written, Vayiktsof Moshe al Pikudei HaChoyel. This is last week's Sedra. Moshe got angry at the soldiers who came back from wiping out the Midianites because they didn't do a thorough enough job. And they left the women alive, and Moshe was angry because it was the women who caused the whole problem. The reason that the Midianites were wiped out, or one of the reasons that they were wiped out, you'll remember, is because of the advice given to them by Bilam, which was to get their young ladies to reduce the moral standing and stature of the young Jewish men, and that would break the whole social and moral fabric of the people. And Bilam knew that once you've done that to the Jewish people, they're destroyed. Says Moshe, it was through the women that the whole thing was done. They are the first ones who have to be wiped out. And Moshe got angry. Let's look at the Rambam's criteria. Did he get angry about something? Dovah Godel? Yes. Sheroi Lichoy Solov? Certainly. It was something worthy of his anger. Kadei Sheloi Yaseh Boichim Pam Shnios, so that such a thing will not happen a second time? Yes. So Moshe is fully entitled to get angry. Is Moshe a person who can control his anger? Absolutely. So there's nothing wrong. Moshe got angry, absolutely in order. And you'll remember when we started off the series, the only reason that Moshe was not allowed to get angry at the Meimah River, at the hitting of the rock, was because he conveyed the impression that God was angry and God didn't want to create that impression at that particular stage. But Moshe himself was entitled to get angry then. And here too, Moshe himself is 100% entitled to get angry. And soon afterwards, what does it say? Vayomer Elazar HaKoyen El Anshei HaTzova HaBoim LeMilchoma Zois Chukas HaToyro Asher Tziva Moshe. Elazar HaKohen gets up and he gives a speech and he says, these are the laws of the Torah which Moshe commanded. And he starts listing a whole lot of halachas. What halachas does he list? He lists the halachas of kashering, because they brought a whole lot of utensils back from Midian which weren't kosher. And he teaches them how you've got to kasher. Some things have to be kashered with cold water, some things have to be kashered with hot water, some things have to be kashered with a flame. Each thing he defines exactly how you go through the kashering process. And that's the basis of all our laws today of kashering. And who gave us those laws? Elazar. Ask the Gemara, where was Moshe? Michlal de Moshe iolimine. Must be that Moshe forgot the halachas. It's the most amazing thing altogether. Moshe would have forgotten some complicated halachas of Tumah and Tahara, some complicated halachas of kodshim, of bringing sacrifices, real complicated halachas. No, one might understand. But what did Moshe forget the very halachas that every little boy who gets to write a smicha test knows? That's what they ask. How do you kasher this clean? How do you kasher that clean? Every little nothing, easy. Those are the halachas Moshe Rabbeinu forgot. Is it possible? And secondly, but more important in fact to what we're discussing, is the Gemara starts off by saying, "Im chochom hu chochmoso mistalekis mimenu." If he is a wise man, his wisdom departs from him. And the example given is the area of halacha, laws. One would think that halacha is not the area of chochma, of wisdom. One would think that halacha is just a matter of a good memory. You've got to know what the dinim are. So you go to the Kitzu Shulchan Aruch, or if you're very advanced, you go through the Chai Odom and the Chochmas Odom, or if you're already a Talmid Chochem, you go through the Mishnah Brura, and if you're an Iluy and a Gon, you open a Reel Shulchan Aruch and look at the Shach and the Taz and the Magen Avrom, and you know the halachas, and then it's just a matter of remembering them. That's given as the example of Chochmah, of wisdom. I think we need to understand firstly that Chochmah is sometimes used in a very broad sense, meaning wisdom, all forms of wisdom. But sometimes Chochmah, the word Chochmah, is used in distinction to various other forms of wisdom, because we have many different words all to describe wisdom. Every culture has almost synonyms to describe things which are very important to that culture. I've mentioned it to you before, that the Bushmen have I don't know how many dozen words to describe water. All different kinds of water. Water that comes out of a tap, and water which you find in a lake are two different words. Rainwater is yet another word. River water is yet another word. These are completely different. Water is such an important part of their culture that to them each little difference in water deserves a new word for itself, because it's an important thing. Eskimos for snow have I don't know how many different words. The different kinds of snow. We don't even notice the difference. But to them, there are specific words to connotate this kind of snow and that kind of snow. And so it goes on. We, when it comes to wisdom, we have half a dozen words. Chochmah is important to us. So for all the different types of Chochmah, in English there's just one word, wisdom. In the Torah, in Hebrew, there are many, many different words. Three times a day we say, Ato chonein lo'odom da'as. And we say, Bino, the Haskel. There's Bino, there's Seichel, there's Das, there's Chochma, there's Tvuno. Many different words, all to describe what would appear to be the same thing. And sometimes the word Chochma is used as a particular part of the broad concepts called Chochma. In other words, Chochma is the general term, and it is also one of the specific terms of the different sections and different types of wisdom of Chochma. And the Vilna Gaon defines some of these different areas in the beginning of the second chapter of Mishlei, which will be starting next week, in fact, in the earlier shir. Chochma hu ma she'odom mekabel miraboy. That's the definition of Chochma, the no-nonsense definition. Chochma is that which you received from your Rebbe. The first level of knowledge, the bottom level, it's the foundation, it's that on top of which everything else is built. We've talked many times about how in Torah our whole starting point is to try and get back to them, to our predecessors, not to try and go that much further. That we can't do. Chochmah, as opposed to the other forms of knowledge, each one has its own name. Chochmah is ma she'odom mekabel mirabbi, that which a man receives from his Rebbe. Full stop. What are halachas? Halachas are the same. We don't make halachas. We don't create halachas. Halachas is the practical application of the Torah. What do you do? We have a Shulchan Aruch. We have a Rambam. We have a Rif. We have a Rosh. These things are passed down. Sure, as new problems arise in each generation, we need poskim to apply the old halachas to the new problems. But in essence, an ordinary person who is not a posek doesn't make up halachas. You can make other chidushim a little bit yourself, but even there we'll discuss that's not the essence of learning. But in halacha, certainly you're not qualified to do that. In halacha, when it comes to halacha, what you need to know is what your Rebbe said. That's it. That's all you need to know. Now, why is it that a man who gets angry loses his chochmah? I could imagine with a stretch, or understand with a stretch, that a man who gets angry loses his ability to be creative in his learning. that he loses his ability to understand some of the refinements of learning. All sorts of things I can understand, but of all the areas of knowledge, I would think the most difficult area to forget, particularly to forget because you got angry, would be halachas. Just because I get angry, am I going to forget that you're not allowed to turn the lights on Shabbos? Just because I got angry, am I going to forget that you mustn't mix meat and milk? I might forget an answer of a difficult kasha that on the Rambam, which was answered by the case of Mishnah. Maybe I'll forget that. But to think that I'm going to forget halachas, I'm not talking about halachas that I never knew, I'm talking about halachas that were new, like Moshe Rabbeinu knew the halachas of kashrus. That can be forgotten, that's amazing. That Mashi Odom Mekabel Mirabboi, that which a man receives from his Rebbe, that can be forgotten. That's a very frightening thought. And if you forget one of the higher levels of knowledge, so from there onwards you don't have. But if you forget Mashi Odom Mekabel Mirabboi, if you forget what you got from your Rebbe, you've got nothing. The rest of the building is shaky, because it's the foundations which are being pulled out. At any stage that you don't remember the Torah which your Rebbe taught you, at that moment, what do you have? Because everything else is built on that. So I think we have to go back to that Pasuk in Mishnah. The Pasuk in Mishnah said, Erech Apayim Rav Tvuna. A man who can control his anger has much wisdom. But here Mishnah uses the word Tvuna, which is a different type of wisdom to Chochmah. Chochmah is the wisdom of knowledge. It's quantitative knowledge. It's a matter of knowing that which your Rebbe taught you. Your Rebbe taught you Aleph, you know Aleph. He taught you Beis, you know Beis. Taught you Gimel, you know Gimel. That's Chochmah. What is Tevunah? So the Vilna Gaon defines Tevunah. Before I define Tevunah for you, let me tell you what the Vilna Gaon's definition is of a third level, which is Bina. But Chochmah is Mashi Odom Mekabel Mirabbi, that which you received from your Rebbe, right? That which you received from your teachers. Bina is the ability to deduce the refinements of that which you've learned. To notice things in there, to be Loimei Dova Mitoch Dova, out of the text, to be able to learn new things. To be able to notice that because a particular word is used rather than another one, that must mean something a little bit more refined and a little bit more sophisticated. To notice that it can't mean what it appears to mean on the surface, because that doesn't go quite together with the next sentence. So you develop something a little bit clearer. To develop that further understanding of the text, that's Bina. So Chochmah is the factual knowledge of what you received from your Rebbe, and Bina is the ability to deduce, the ability to discover in that knowledge further meaning and further understanding accurately. Now on Tevunah, Tevunah is different from Bina. On Tevunah, says the Vilna Gaon, Milas Tevunah hi bein bechochma uvein bevina. The concept of Tevunah applies both to Bina and to Chochma. Right. Both to the quantitative knowledge that you received from your Rebbe and to your own deductive process, you can use the term Tevunah. What is Tevunah? Kasher yovin hadover al borio hu nikra Tevunah. When you know the thing clearly, then it's Tevunah. So to know what your Rebbe taught you, that's Chochmah. To know it clearly is Tevunah. Ulahavin hadover al borio. And in order to know a thing clearly, tzorich hatayos halev. You need to apply your heart. It's not just your brain. You'll see in a moment, at the end of the sentence, he gives the knack as to what it means to know a thing clearly. But he's building up towards it. To know it clearly, he says, you need to apply your heart, not your brain. Your brain is to know the Chochmah. Now you know it. But to achieve that clarity of knowledge, you need to apply your heart. Ki halev mevin, because the heart understands. Now we're getting a little bit more to what Tevunah means, from the word mevin, understanding. Chochmah is to know what your Rebbe taught you. Tevunah is to understand what your Rebbe taught you. And that's called clarity. When you understand it, it becomes clear. Until you understand it, it's not clear. You might be able to repeat it like a parrot, but that's not clarity. Clarity is when you've integrated it, when you understand it. And for that, you need to apply your heart. The Kach Omar, that's why Mishle says, Tate libcha litvuna, apply your heart to wisdom, but it uses the word tvuna for this type of wisdom. V'hu ha-tvuna shel chochma, that is the tvuna, the understanding of knowledge. V'hainu lehovin ha-dova shekibel mirabosov al-borio, that means to understand that which you receive from your Rabbeim al-borio, with absolute clarity. Three words he adds. Ma shebelev raboy, to understand what was in your Rebbe's heart when he taught you that. That's what is true. And that's something which can't be communicated. There's no way one can use words to communicate what's in one's heart. One can use words to describe what's in one's heart, but it's not yet communicating what's in one's heart. You can't take an emotion. You can't take an... We're dealing with something even deeper than an emotion. You can't take the soul of something and convert it into words. The words will always be inadequate. The words will always be open to misunderstanding. They will always be open to superficial understanding. They will always be open to distortion. To understand Masha Belev Rabbi, to understand what was in his heart when he said it, for that you need heart. You need your own heart. It's the application of your heart to his words that might enable you to achieve Tevunah. To achieve that level of knowledge which is called tevuna, the understanding of the chokhmah. What is halacha? Before we go on to that, so that therefore explains the pasuk in chapter Yudalat, Erech Apayim Rav Tevuna. A man who is able to control his anger will have great tevuna, great understanding. We've now got a better translation for it. Deep understanding, rather than much knowledge. We'll explain why soon. But let's meanwhile look at halacha. Back to the Gemara in Psachim Daf Samach Vav. What is halacha? On the surface, we would think that halacha is the easiest part of the Torah to acquire. It's just a matter of swatting. You just need to know the dini. What we see over here is that it's a long way off from that. Just to know the dini, you won't forget it when you get angry. Anger isn't an interference with just remembering the facts. But tevuna and anger are the two things that contradict one another. That's what we see from Mishnah. And the Vilna Gaon defines tevuna as knowing what's the heart of the matter. So when the Gemara in Psachim says that Moshe Rabbeinu forgot the halachas, does that mean that he didn't remember how to kasher a pot? You can phone up Rabbi Schmeckfontein in some little dorp somewhere and ask him how to kasher the pot, and he'll tell you. Moshe Rabbeinu, you'll phone, he won't be able to tell you. Sorry, he'll say, I got angry yesterday, so I don't remember how to kasher the pot. It's absurd. It's not possible. Of course he remembered how to kasher the pot. So why did Elazar have to tell them and not Moshe Rabbeinu? Because at that moment, Moshe wasn't clear enough in his own mind. He didn't feel that he understood it al-borio, that he understood it with its full intent. He didn't feel that he understood the heart of the halacha sufficiently. Because when you're talking about understanding the heart, it's not something that once you've understood, it's always with you. You're talking about being tuned in. And if you're not tuned in for a moment, at that moment you don't understand the heart of it. You might have understood it yesterday and you might understand it again tomorrow. But you don't understand the heart at that moment. How often does it happen that you sit and you listen to a shiur, and while you're listening to the shiur, you understand exactly what the person who's giving the shiur means? Exactly what he's trying to get across. And a week later or a day later, you'll be repeating the shiur, and you'll be able to repeat it nearly word for word. And you won't be able to figure out what it was so clear to you then what he was trying to say, and now you can't figure out what it's always going on and on and on, and you don't know what he's trying to say. You're out of tune. The heart is not applied. It's much easier to apply the heart in an interpersonal situation when one person is talking to another. It's much easier to listen with heart than it is to listen to a tape recorder or to read a book. But that can also be done, but it needs application of heart. It needs hatoyas halev. Without that, there can be no tevuna. There can be chokhmah. You can remember what your Rebbe taught you. You can repeat what your Rebbe taught you. But to have tevuna, to have that clarity where you understand what was in his heart when he was talking to you, that you can't have without hatoyas halev. And at the moment of being confronted with the shaila of how to kasher the pots, Moshe would not answer. Not because he didn't know the din, but because at that moment he felt that the real inner meaning of what was God's intention when he gave these halachas, what was in God's heart when he said, dip the thing into boiling water, when he said, go over it with a blowtorch, What was in God's heart at that moment? He wasn't tuned in to that, and so he didn't pass the Neshayla. And we get a bit of an insight as to what a halacha is. A law is not just a do and a don't. A part of the pot and a milchik a spoon with a fleshik a soup. What do I do, Rabbi? Oh, A, B, C. That's not what it is. It's a matter at the time of paskening the halacha, of understanding the intention of that particular halacha, which is a different thing altogether. That's Hatayus Halev. So far we've got the axiom. We don't understand it yet. We have the chokhmah, but not the tefunah. The chokhmah is that kaas, anger, and tefunah don't go hand in hand. When you are angry, you cannot have deep understanding. That's what we know so far. You can know the facts, but you cannot have deep understanding. Now, when the Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai are arguing about, like, whom is the halacha? They're not arguing about who's right and who's wrong. Beis Hillel would never have taken so much trouble to understand Beis Shammai if they didn't believe that Beis Shammai was also right, or even more correct than them, maybe. The fact that they always put Beis Shammai before themselves, that wasn't just to flatter Beis Shammai, because nothing would Beis Hillel ever have done which came close to being false. And there is little so false as flattery. There is little so undermining and so false and so much sheker as flattery. And Beis Hillel would never have put Beis Shammai's name before their own just to flatter Beis Shammai. If Beis Hillel put Beis Shammai's name before their own, it's because they themselves believed that Beis Shammai was more accurate. So if Beis Shammai is more accurate, why might the halacha be like me? And in fact, why is the halacha like Beis Hillel? Because when it comes to the halacha, one needs a different dimension. Halacha, we said, entails two things. It entails absolute clarity of what the din is. To have that degree of clarity, by the way, in all areas of halacha, is possible. There are poskim, there are some great poskim in the world that have it. Most ordinary mortals don't. And that's why any good person, when he's asked a halacha, even if it's a relatively easy one, will go through it in the Sforim again. Because just to know what the din is not sufficient. One has to know it al borio. You have to know it with absolute clarity. And that's why it takes so long. One can be asked a shayla, and it's not always that easy to be able to give an answer immediately. It is easy to give an answer immediately. It's too easy to give an answer immediately. And the answer might even be right. But Moshe Rabbeinu, who clearly knew what was right and what was wrong and how to kasher a pot, didn't answer it because he didn't know it al borio. It requires a person to take out a Shulchan Aruch, and to learn through the Siman a few times with the Moshe Kalim and with the Gemaras where necessary, and with the Tur and the Beis Yosef where necessary, and to go into the whole thing until he has clarity of what his Rabbeim have said about it. And when we talk about Rabbeim, we don't talk only of our immediate Rabbeim. We talk of our Rebbe the Rambam, we talk of our Rebbe the Rif, we talk of our Rebbe the Rosh, our Rebbe the Shulchan Aruch, our Rebbe the Shach, our Rebbe the Taz. These are our Rabbeim when it comes to halacha. And the first requirement in halacha is to know with absolute clarity what our Rabbeim have said. The second requirement in halacha is to know with absolute clarity and to understand the situation to which you're trying to apply it. Because halacha differs from situation to situation. To understand the human situation which needs the halacha applied, those are the two things which one needs. And we've said that in order to understand a halacha, in order to understand the chokhma al borio, says the Vilna Gaon, what do you need? Tevuna. You need understanding. You need hatoyas halev. You need to know what was in the heart of the Shulchan Aruch when he wrote down that paragraph. What was in the heart of the Shach when he said what he said, and the heart of the Taz when he said what he said. What was in the heart of the Ribbono Shel Olam when he gave that halacha? That's what to know it with clarity means, not just to know what it says there, but to understand it in all its depth as far as one is capable of doing. That's tevuna. And if one doesn't have that tevuna, one isn't ready yet for the halacha. And what does it mean to understand the human situation? Exactly the same. That one needs to understand what's in the heart of the person who's asking. What's involved, what the sides are, what the possibilities are. One needs not to know the facts. To know the facts is easy. One needs to understand the facts. And to understand the facts is hard. And we learned in Mishle that the one thing that doesn't go with understanding is kaas, anger. Anger and understanding don't go together. Why not? Because the element required for understanding is perception. You've just got to see what's really there. The danger of chaos, of anger, or of any other emotion is that once you're emotional about it, you are no longer capable of seeing what's really there. That's the tragedy of an emotion. That once your emotion is there, your mind and your eyes follow already the emotion. Not only your mind, not only your thinking, you actually see in a distorted way. The facts become distorted to suit the emotion. There's no way a person can live with a conflict between his emotions and reality. There's no way that you can walk around, let's say you have an emotion, you're scared of darkness, it's 12 o'clock midday, and you're scared of the dark. I'm shooting it, you've got an emotion, such an emotion. Trembling away, why are you scared? I'm scared of the darkness. So you say, but look outside, my friend, it's light. Looks outside, he says, no, it's dark. He's got to see that it's dark, because he's scared of the darkness, that's the way it starts. What caused the fear of the darkness? That the doctors have to find out. But the fact is, he has a fear of darkness. And if at this moment he's scared of darkness, he will see that it's dark. There's no way he will be able to live with a conflict between his emotions and the facts. Because he knows that would be idiotic. So he distorts the facts to suit the emotions. When a person is angry, there are many things he can do when he's angry. But one thing he can't do, and that's to see the facts as they really are. To see life as it really is, to see people as they really are, to see situations as it really is. That he can't do when he's angry. Because what he does is when he's angry, he kicks the lamppost. Now you're going to come to him and say, but the lamppost wasn't at fault. So his obvious answer is going to be, it was. He's got to see that somehow, in some crazy, mad way, that's how he'll see that the lamppost was at fault. Angry with someone, say, but he didn't do it. It's not his fault, it was him. No, it was his fault too. So what can you do? You're just going to keep quiet. There's no way that while he's angry, while A is angry with B, that you'll be able to explain to A that it wasn't B's fault. It's not possible until the anger is gone. When it comes to understanding to tivuna, what one needs is perception of the ultimate. Not just perception of the surface, but perception until Mashe belave Rabbi, to see to the heart of an issue, right into the middle. And to see into the heart of the halacha, of the law, and to see at the same time into the heart of the situation. That you can't do when you're all emotional. It's not possible. And this, I think, explains our fear of incorrect emotional handling. And that is, that if an emotion follows on clear perception, the emotion is wonderful. A person... You get different people seeing the same thing and coming up with all different emotions. If somebody comes to Jerusalem the first time and he arrives just before Shabbos, he spends Shabbos in Tel Aviv, and then after Shabbos he takes the Sheirut to Yerushalayim. And he comes into Yerushalayim and he looks at people walking in the streets and an atmosphere of festivity, and then it's Shabbos and lovely, and the cafes are full and the ice cream parlors are full and such a lovely thing, and he's so excited, he wants to get out and dance. This is Eretz Yisrael, he's been waiting for years to see it on Motzei Shabbos in Yerushalayim, and his heart is overflowing with joy. You'll find another man sitting next to him in the same taxi. Also the first time in Eretz Yisrael, also arrived just before Shabbos, also just comes to Yerushalayim on Motzei Shabbos, and he looks around, and the tears start streaming down. Yerushalayim and Motzei Shabbos, look how people are dressed. Look at them. Look at the way they're behaving. Look at them eating in the streets in Yerushalayim. Is this what Jerusalem is? And he's crying. Both of them are emotional. So the one who's all happy wants to get out and hug the first person he sees, and the one who's crying wants to get out and punch the nose of the first person he sees. They're both emotional. Both emotions caused by the same thing. Which emotion is right? It's a question of perception. It's a question of seeing things as they really are and responding emotionally to something which is accurately observed. But to respond emotionally to something which is not accurately observed, that wouldn't be right. You can have a father his wife has just given birth to a baby, and he's crying and crying and saying, my goodness, what's the matter? Is the baby alright? Yes, the baby's alright. Yeah, everybody's alright. So what are you crying about? He says, oi, my wife was crying, it was so painful. And it's such a sad thing, I'm so heartbroken. What's your heart broken about? It's all okay. He hasn't perceived right. He's only seen a very small part of the whole picture. It's so easy to see in simple things with which we're all familiar. But when it comes to bigger issues where you need a bigness to see the whole picture, and small people aren't capable of seeing the whole picture, all they're capable of seeing is one little corner, and the absolute surface of that little corner, and deeper than that they can't. If they're emotional people, they'll get emotional about what they've seen, and it's all wrong. They haven't seen the thing right. And so the emotions are wrong. And the actions which result from the emotions are also wrong. And then one's worried. As long as a person is using his head, you can still reason with him. And you can still say, my friend, don't be upset, because you haven't seen the whole picture. Come, I'll show you the rest of it. And you can reason with him, and he can see the rest of it, and he'll understand. But once he's all emotional, you can't reason with him anymore. And most emotions are not that serious, because most emotions affect yourself only. At worst, so you do yourself a little bit of harm. But when it comes to kas, perhaps I'm wrong. In fact, perhaps I should modify that last statement. It's equally bad with all emotions. You remember at the very first shiur on kas, we spoke about the Vilna Gaon's dividing of all the aveiras, of all the sins, into the kasoni and the ta'avoni, those that are motivated by anger and those that are motivated by desire. You cross the barriers of propriety either because you want to destroy what's on the other side of the barrier, or because you want something for yourself what's on the other side of the barrier. It's either a question of taking something or destroying something. And all the aveiras in the Torah, and he divided it into loytitzach and loytinach. Sexual immorality is the paramount example of the ta'avoni, of those aveiras caused by excessive desire, and loytitzach, murder, is an example. Of those aveiros caused by excessive aggression. And so everything really, any emotion will fit either into an aggressive emotion or into an emotion of desire. You either want to destroy something which exists, or you want something for yourself. And those emotions can be destructive for more than one person in terms of their consequences. And that's why the Gemara says, the halacha is like Beis Hillel. Not because Beis Shammai was less right. Beis Shammai was in fact more accurate in a purely academic sense. But when it comes to halacha, Beis Hillel somehow had a deeper perception of the really what lay at the heart of it. And when it comes to halacha, that's what was important. Beis Hillel had a deeper perception of what lay at the heart of the situation to which they were applying the halacha. Beis Hillel had sablonus, he was able to be patient in a way that Beis Shammai wasn't. Beis Shammai was unable to be patient, says the Maharal Miprag, not because he was an impatient person, and not because they were impatient people. They were unable to be patient because the truth was so clear in their mind they couldn't tolerate any deviation from it. Whereas Beis Hillel could. Beis Hillel could understand what was going on, he could hear. I think the best example that one can give to you to describe the difference between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, and that will crystallize the whole thing, is a person who has a terribly finely attuned musical ear, and they cannot tolerate a note which is just off. Nobody else would hear that the note is off altogether, but it aggravates them. So imagine they're listening to a violin concerto where the violin just isn't tuned right, and every single note that the violin plays is just that little bit off. They can't listen. They actually have to get up and go out. It destroys their whole ability to listen. So they're impatient people. What kind of people are they? Just because the violin's slightly out, they can't listen? And then you'll have the other person who can hear that it's out a little bit, but it doesn't bother him that much. He's able to tolerate it. There comes a time where one's perfectionism is in fact an interference to one's ability to listen and to perceive. One is so put off by something which is not 100% perfect that one's unable to perceive it in reality. Beis Shammai were perfectionists. And they were unable to tolerate any deviation, no matter how slight, from that perfectionism. And that's why we're told after Mashiach comes, the halacha will be like Beis Shammai, not like Beis Hillel. In terms of perfectionism, Beis Shammai exceeded Beis Hillel. But it resulted in a certain impatience in Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai couldn't sit and teach a goy the whole Torah while he's standing on one foot. Because that would entail watering it down in a way, that would entail presenting it to him in a concentrated, digested sort of way, and Beis Shammai wasn't prepared to give him anything but the whole story from beginning to end, and that would take him 20 years, and there's no shortcut. Finish. Take it or leave it. They said that they're really prepared to see the situation, to see into the heart of the non-Jew, to see into the heart of the Torah which is teaching, and to teach the principles without going into all of the details. Beis Hillel could do that. And when it comes to halacha, our preference is for Beis Hillel. Because when it comes to halacha, the important ingredient is the ability to listen, the ability to see, the ability to hear. And for that you need midas. For that you need modesty. For that you need patience. For that you need pleasantness. It's not easy to listen, especially when you know a lot more than the person who's talking. It's not easy to listen to a stupid question, and it's even more difficult to listen to a stupid answer, and to listen to stupid sentences that are going on. It's not easy. But in listening, one might be able to discover something about the person talking, the way he says something, the way his eye flickers when he uses a particular word. If one's listening with chokhmah, one will be able to learn an awful lot even from an idiot when he talks. It's possible, it can be done, but you need to listen. And to listen, you have to have midas. But when it comes to halacha, it's the midas that we need, it's the listening that we need. It's not so much the knowledge. The knowledge you'll find is in the books. It's the understanding of that knowledge, and it's the application of that knowledge. And for that you have to listen to the human being's problem, and you have to listen to the halacha, and you have to find some way that you can connect the two together. The heart of the halacha with the heart of the problem, and make the connection there. It's not good enough to work around the heart. And that's why ka'as, anger, when one's already made up one's mind and one's taken in an emotional stand. Ka'as is also very closely related to gaiva, to arrogance. Those kind of midas disturb one's ability of hearing, as do the other midas which Beis Hillel, or as do the opposite of the other midas which Beis Hillel is praised for. Noichin, they were pleasant. In order to listen, you need to be pleasant, because if you're not pleasant, the person will be afraid to speak. If you're rough and you're quick and you're impatient, a person won't speak it all out, and it's in the speaking it out that it all comes out. It's not in a concentrated form that you'll understand the heart. In a concentrated form, you can understand the surface. But to understand the heart, you'll only understand when the whole story has come out. And the more you get into speak, eventually you'll find what's at the heart of the thing, what's really troubling you. The person comes to you and is troubled. What's troubling you? I have insomnia. I can't sleep at night. That's my problem. So you give him a sleeping pill and say goodbye. That's no good. You start talking, why can't you sleep at night? I don't know. Anything troubling you? No. So you realize that's not going to work. So you get starting to get, so you get to get, you get him speaking. Tell me a little bit about the life you lead. How many children have you got? Where are they at school? Are they doing well? How old is your wife? What does she do? Interesting, your parents, her parents. Slowly the talk and the talk, and now you're listening to a man with an intelligence, let's say, of an IQ of 80, but you've got to solve his problem, and you've got to listen carefully to every word, because somewhere in one word you're going to find the hint to the problem, you're going to find the answer. But you need to listen. Now if you're a quick and a rough person, is he going to talk it all out? So say, I don't want to waste your time, so look, can you give me something for my insomnia or not? If you don't want to give me, I'll go to another doctor, and off you go. A person who's pleasant, they'll speak it out. So mitnashin noichin, the halacha is like Beis Hillel because of their pleasantness, and because aluvin hayu, because they were able to suffer, they were able to go through, to persist and to tolerate. V'sheinin divrein v'divrei Beis Shammai, they were able to listen and to learn Beis Shammai's view as well as their own. They weren't married to their own view. They could listen to somebody else's view, and not only that, they were able to put Beis Shammai's view even before their own. That's what's important to know. So I think in summarizing very briefly, we talked about aggressive and non-aggressive anger. We talked about Yaakov's anger with Lavan as being virtually non-aggressive. And more important than that, we talked about active and reactive anger. Utilizing anger, mastering anger when you need it, and being able in anger to act as you would out of anger. If you do things in anger which you wouldn't have done if you weren't angry, you haven't mastered anger. We talked about the Ochas Tzadikim's resolution of the Stira and the Rambam, the different types of anger, and we said that where a man has mastered anger, he may use anger in certain situations which the Rambam defines. But until a person has mastered anger, while he's still busy trying to master anger, he may not use anger at all. Never, not one little bit of it. Because once you start using a little bit of it, you lose control totally, unless you're a master of anger. And we talked about anger as being the means of being cruel to somebody you love. If you don't love the person, you don't need anger to be cruel. It's only when you love the person and feel mercy that anger is the emotion that counteracts that mercy to enable you to do things which you know need to be done, but you wouldn't have the guts to do because you love the person too much. And sometimes you need to get angry to do it. But that's called active anger. That's when you master your anger and you employ it to achieve a specified and predetermined result. You don't land up doing anything in your anger that you didn't plan to do. You just needed your anger in order to get you to do it, but you knew exactly what had to be done and you didn't overdo it once. For example, the law of stripes, one has to sometimes administer corporal punishment in Jewish law. And chas v'sholem that one should give one stripe more than one is supposed to give. It's no heter just because one's hitting somebody to go over the mark. Exactly what that person needs to get and not one more. And so when one's administering any form of aggression, where one's decided that that aggression needs to have been administered, provided one has already mastered one's anger, only that which one has decided to do, one may not do anything more than that in one's anger. And lastly today, the question of the conflict between anger and clear perception. The conflict between any emotion and clear perception. Once you're emotional, you cannot perceive clearly. And to be emotional because you saw something when you didn't perceive it clearly is also bad. One needs to perceive a thing clearly before you get emotional about it. One needs to know exactly what the truth of the thing is and then get emotional about the truth, not about what appears to be the truth. And that's a lifetime of training, of self-discipline and of learning how to see a thing as it really is before one gets excited. And without dampening one's excitement, one mustn't then be like a stone. That even after you've perceived it correctly, you can't get excited. Certainly not. One needs to be able to get excited, but to be able to get excited after clear perception, not before clear perception. Because excitement that comes before clear perception is wrong in itself and distorts the perception. And particularly where that excitement is anger. We talked about halacha. That halacha is being that wisdom, knowing with clarity what one's rabbeim have taught one. But knowing it with the Vilna Gaon's clarity, Alborio, which means knowing what was in the heart of one's Rebbe. Likewise, knowing what is in the heart of the situation to which one has to apply that knowledge which one has acquired from one's Rebbe. And to know what is at the heart of a situation needs the ultimate of perception. And for that ultimate of perception, you need Midas. A great Rosh Yeshiva said to me a few months ago, he said, don't think that great learning produces great Midas. It's the other way around. A man who has great midas will be able to learn with greatness because he will have the modesty and the quietness and the patience, as we've discussed with Hillel, to be able to perceive the thing in all its depth. A man without the midas will not. And while he'll get very excited and and be able to do all sorts of things, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's been able to see to the heart of a thing. And what's got in the way can be the midas itself. It's not the learning which creates the midas. That should be, but it isn't. It's the midas which can create the learning. It's through that kind of character which the Torah tries to develop in a human being, that a human being can develop deeper perception. The man's perception is blinded and is distorted by incorrect midas. And that's something that needs a lot of work. We're approaching the month of Elul. The month of Elul is not just a time where one tries to rectify things one did wrong. Most of the things we did wrong are because we perceived situations incorrectly. And when we're trying to correct ourselves and raise ourselves and improve ourselves, don't just correct the symptoms. It's not good enough. You've got to find out why you did wrong. If we did wrong because we didn't see correctly, why didn't we see correctly? Because we were too hasty, we got too emotional, we were too angry, whatever it was. We didn't look at the heart of an issue. We need to learn how to develop the ability to look at the heart of an issue, to hear properly, to hear what is actually being said, to see what is actually occurring, and to see right down to its very heart. This week there'll be Tisha B'Av. By the way, Tisha B'Av, one of the reasons that not the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, but it's mentioned in the Gemara, that anger doesn't go together with the Beis HaMikdash at all. And that anger is one of the destructive elements in the Beis HaMikdash. As long as people are still operating with aggression, whether subconscious aggression or conscious aggression, no Beis HaMikdash is going to be built. Unless the aggression is on the lines we've been discussing as to how that aggression needs to be channeled and needs to be operated with. So altogether these inyonim that we've been discussing apply very much to this time of the year, and particularly to Elul, which comes thereafter. This is, by the way, the last shiur that we're having in this premises. From next week we'll be in the new premises, which are on the corner of Raglan Street and 10th Avenue. That's just a block and a half up the road. The parking situation should be a little bit better. Probably not right at the beginning. It might take us a couple of weeks before the parking area is organized. Be that as it may, it's a corner house, so there's a little bit more parking available both in the property and around the property. Again, it might be a week or two before we're actually comfortable there, but I think it'll be cooler than it's been here. I think that it will be a little bit more spacious than it's been here. And I hope that whatever Torah we've been able to learn here, we will continue learning over there. The fact that it will be in more comfort will not in any way detract from the quality of that learning. There's no question that the mesirus nefesh that one puts into one's learning is a very big factor in the siyata dishmaya and in the help that God gives one to understand one's learning. We once gave a shiur about that not long ago. And I think that on your part there's been a great deal of mesirus nefesh. I'm talking to this particular shiur. Firstly, it's on the Motzei Shabbos, which I know takes a lot of time. That I don't feel embarrassed for you, because I think there's nothing better to be doing at Motzei Shabbos than learning. And I think that that can affect the rest of one's week. And I think that a lot of people destroy the whole effect of their Shabbos by not using their Motzei Shabbos correctly. There's nothing more anticlimactic at the end of a Shabbos than running out to the movies. And as I've said to you before, whether movies are good or bad, that's another discussion. But please, not on a Motzei Shabbos. A Sunday night, a Monday night, a Tuesday night, a Wednesday night, rather every night of the week, excepting Friday night and Saturday night. Because if your Motzei Shabbos is right, your whole week can be elevated onto a different level. It's the critical time, that moment that links next week with Shabbos. And your whole Shabbos effect can be lost because your Motzei Shabbos is an anticlimax. So I don't feel any guilt at all in holding you here on a Motzei Shabbos. I'm sure it's done a lot of you a lot of good, and maybe a little piece in Olam Haba is waiting you as well as in Olam Haza because of the way you handled your Motzei Shabbos. So that I don't apologize for. But still it's a mesirus nefesh on your part. It's also a mesirus nefesh because I know that it's hot in here, particularly in the summer, and it's uncomfortable and it's crowded. And the fact that you come and that you listen so attentively with that mesirus nefesh certainly has a lot to do with the success of this particular shiur. And I hope that while we will be reducing the mesirus nefesh, that's why I say that won't reduce the quality of your learning. That it will be a little bit more comfortable, but that should add to the learning, not in any way detract from it. So we look forward very much to welcoming you there next Motzei Shabbos. In fact, we will be moving into the Beis HaMikdash for Shabbos. That will be our first Shabbos there. And we look forward to welcoming you all there then.